From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made at a dinner party where a group of friends were talking. The moment is described by Roger Angel, perhaps the greatest baseball writer ever and a longtime writer and editor for The New Yorker. Angel is now 97, still writing. He wrote this when he was 93 in a piece titled This Old Man. It was about aging and loss and grief and basic human need. And in this section, Angel is discussing what happens when younger people are in a group conversation, which includes someone significantly older. He writes, quote, "We elders have learned a thing or two, including invisibility. Here I am in a conversation with some trusty friends, old friends, but actually not all that old. They're in their 60s. And we're finishing the wine and in serious converse about global warming. There's a pause, and I chime in with a couple of sentences. The others look at me politely, then resume the talk exactly at the point where they've just left it. What? Hello? Didn't I just say something? Have I left the room? I didn't expect to take over the chat, but did await a word or two of response. Not tonight, though. Women I know say that this began to happen to them when they passed the age of 50. And when I mention the phenomenon to anyone around my age, I get back nods and smiles. Yes, we're invisible. Honored, respected, even loved, but not quite worth listening to anymore. You've had your turn, Pops. Now it's ours." End quote. Well, I've always appreciated that piece by Roger Angel, and it came to mind for me recently when I had a conversation with my dad. My dad's 73. Angel might call him a spring chicken, or perhaps an autumn chicken, maybe. And my dad was an attorney for many years. He was recently forced into retirement, which he did not want. And he told me that now when he wakes up, no one needs to call, to show up, to contribute. It's a big, big change for him. And in that spirit, we want to have a conversation this hour about relevance, about finding avenues to contribute as we get older, and about the phenomenon that Roger Angel described, feeling sometimes invisible. My guests are not invisible. They're hilarious, and I'm already enjoying the conversation. I wish you could have been here for the first 5 minutes of the hour, but NPR News got in the way of us. So let me say hello to the folks in studio. David Diatore is a part-time security officer for WXXI Public Broadcasting and an aspiring writer. Dave, it's great to see you in the studio up here in my digs.
Good to be here.
Nice to have you. It's nice to have Xenia Brown as well, a part-time receptionist for WXXI Public Broadcasting Council. Again, I don't know that I've seen you in the studio. I see you all the time, but downstairs.
So. Yes.
Nice to have you.
Well, thank you.
Also with us is Nancy Preston Stark, a retiree and a playwright. Nancy, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Deborah White. Deb is a retiree and an adventurer. Deb, welcome to you as well.
Thank you so much.
I'm going to start with a conversation I had with my dad. Now, just a few minutes here. He was in Rochester recently, visiting from Cleveland, and I asked him to come in and sit down, and he was kind enough to do that and to really kind of open up about what's been hard for him this year. So let's start with that conversation, me and my dad, Phil Dawson. All right, welcome back to the program. You've been on the program before, at least once.
Yeah, on Favorite Books.
Favorite Books, so this is the second time.
I'm a pro.
Pretty soon we have to start paying you. The reason we're doing this in some way is because of something you said to me recently. You had to retire at the end of last year. Would you have kept working if that wasn't sort of forced?
Yeah, probably I would have, yes.
Would you have push to stay sort of indefinitely? Did you ever envision retiring at all?
Retirement is always in the back of your mind. You have to retire at some point. You cannot keep working. But when you're enjoying it and you know nothing else, you don't think about it happening at any time soon.
You mean in your line of work, retirement has to happen?
It has to happen.
Okay. You're not speaking generally, but that's probably true in a lot of lines of work. And a lot of people embrace it. Why didn't you embrace it?
It was probably, initially, it was just too much of an ego shot. It was feeling I had lost my sense of being relevant. And I woke up on January 2nd, and I realized for the first time since really college, I had no place to go. And that was not a comforting feeling. A lot of my friends who had retired earlier than I did told me how much they love retirement, and you're going to love retirement. And I woke up thinking, what am I going to do today? Where should I go? What should I do? And it was discomforting.
Did you talk to your friends who are enjoying it? Did you try to figure out why they are liking it so much and you are not?
Oh, they tell me all the time. I don't have to ask them anything. You know, it sounds like it's they're trying to convince themselves sometimes. They're telling me how much they enjoy retirement.
You don't buy it?
Well, I have experienced nothing so far that buys it, I'll say that. It's only been 3 months.
But there's this idea that retirement brings autonomy. It brings endless choices that you didn't have before.
That's really not true. That's really not true. You always have choices. It's a question of what you do with your time. Even when you're working, you always have time for choices. Now, all of a sudden, you're overwhelmed with time. And that's something you have to get used to.
I think I have a hard time fully getting my head around some of what you have told me, which we're going to get into in a second, for two reasons. Number one, it's because I'm younger. I'm not near retirement at all. And so it's hard to grapple with the emotions I may have if I ever get there. But it's also because, you know, you're my dad and you are the person who was always hyper relevant to me for counsel, ideas, answers, and everyone around you, I thought, looked at you the same way. And yet what you're telling me is that you not only didn't really want to retire, but you were worried about relevance. The word relevance stayed with me. I mean, what is the concern about relevance to you?
The other half of that coin is when you retire, you realize you're getting old. And old brings with it any number of things, none of which are necessarily attractive. And when you're working and when you have a job with responsibilities, and it doesn't matter at what level, somebody is always going to be relying on you for something. And it probably is unconscious, but it gives you satisfaction to know that you have fulfilled that need that someone else has. And now you are out on an island and nobody's calling, nobody's knocking on the door. Friends do, but nobody is saying, hey, I need your help on this. What do you think about that? How should I do this? You're simply not relevant.
Do you really feel that way, though? I mean, I understand, I guess, the construct you're giving me, but do you truly feel less relevant or not relevant?
Yes, I truly feel that way. Yeah. I also understand it, but being relevant about what is always a good question, but it doesn't matter about what. So now to fill my time, I am looking for things where I will have some relevance.
Okay, so before we get to what you're doing, I think this is an important distinction to draw. At least I'm curious to know if you agree. There's a long-running discussion about whether this country is too focused on work, too focused on work as identity. Europe seems less focused on that. Is your feeling of relevance tied to the fact that, you know, that work has always been so important to you? Not to say that family isn't. Obviously, I don't believe that, but are we too work-centric, and is that part of it?
Well, that's a very strong intellectual question, and obviously, having not experienced the European model, I can't compare. I can only tell you what I've experienced, but from what I've experienced, it is not something I'm enjoying so far.
Okay, and so you have done some things to kind of fill those gaps, and tell us a little bit about what those are. I love the NICU thing.
It stands for Neonatal Intensive Care Unit. I'm simply a volunteer at a local hospital in Cleveland in their NICU unit. These are the preemies. These are the babies who are born with serious problems. And twice a week I go in and I help the nurses. I hold babies, I rock babies, I stroll babies, I feed babies. I'm doing that kind of thing to, number one, kill time, but it is a wonderful experience. So that is how I have satisfied some of my need right now, is helping others. And that is something that you don't need to be retired to do. But when you're retired, it's something important that you should do.
Does that make you feel more relevant?
It's helpful. It's helpful.
You also considered, I was going to call it a career. It wouldn't have been a career, but you considered a line of work post-retirement that, for a guy like you who is squeamish about blood, I never in a million years would have thought that you, Phil Dawson, would have considered a career as a paramedic.
Oh, that was my original thinking. And quite frankly, I pushed it quite seriously for 6 months. I found out where to get trained, how to get trained, and all that went with it.
Did you get training on squeamishness about blood?
I wouldn't have been squeamish about blood.
Yes, you would.
No, that's only
my... You can't just choose that.
No, that's just my own blood.
Oh.
I'm not squeamish about other people's blood. But what was interesting was finding out how to go about becoming a paramedic, I talked to the person who was in charge of it for the entire city or county where I live, and they said, oh, absolutely, you can be trained. Absolutely, you'll probably be very good at it. And by the way, nobody will hire you.
Because why?
And that's what I said. Why? And they said, because the insurance involved for the work that's done would become a problem, because you sometimes would have to carry somebody who weighs 220 pounds down a set of stairs during a fire. And if you can't do that, then that becomes a liability for us. And so people would just say, I can either hire the old guy at 73, or we got this guy who's 28 and lifts weights all day. Let's hire him instead. So she said, don't do it. You won't get hired. But understand, I've sat behind a desk for 46 years, figuratively, and I wanted to get out and do something. I wanted to do something totally different, and that seemed like it would be a very challenging and rewarding occupation. And I found out that most of the shifts are 3 days on, 3 days off type of thing, so it gives you time to do other things as well. So it seemed ideal to me, except that nobody would hire me.
It's always the lawyers, by the way.
Always the lawyers.
Blame the lawyers.
Always the lawyers.
Blame the lawyers.
And if you're unsure about that, ask the lawyers, and they'll tell you.
Yeah, well, you did. Do you remember, you told me when I was younger, you said, Ev, your dad's a lawyer, and you're going to hear a lot of lawyer jokes, and most of them are deserved.
I might have said that.
Okay, and we don't have to get into the other thing that you're spending time with, which is the company business, and I don't want to shill for Dawson Doors. It's a Jamestown-based company. It's a family company, so you're doing some regional sales work for them, and is that making you feel fulfilled or relevant?
I hope it will. It's a product that has a very long lead time, so I've only been at it for 3 months, and so I can't really say how that's going to work out, but yeah, that's taking up some of my time.
Okay, so where I want to close with you is, I want to ask you if you think we marginalize people who have a lot to share and a lot of important perspective as they get older as a society. Roger Angel at 93 wrote a piece for The New Yorker, and Roger at 97 is still the country's best baseball writer. But his piece at 93 was about aging, and he said he would stand in a group of friends and feel like no one would even give him the time of day because he was, quote unquote, the really old guy. And he said that hurt. And it left me wondering, do we always do that? Do we marginalize people as they age? Are you experiencing that? Is there something we could do to change a little bit about this feeling about relevance societally, sort of culturally?
Wow. Well, he is right. I do think society marginalizes older people. I think that when you marginalize older people, you're building up yourself as a younger person. And I think younger people are looking for a need to feel relevant. So they're trying to change the playing field. And I understand that. I understand that. When somebody in a position of responsibility is retired, there are a lot of people who will say, thank goodness, now I can do whatever. Or thank goodness, now I'll get my chance. Yeah, so it he's right. It does happen.
But what can we do about it?
The problem with doing something, well, the problem is the people that have to do something about it are the people who are doing it. And that's always going to be a problem. So I don't think you necessarily do anything. I think that, you know, I think older people eventually, and what I'm trying to do is find a lot of solace in family and in volunteer work and in doing things where the relevance comes from not other people, but from within.
Well, you're still relevant to me, Dad. You're still the best editor I know.
Thank you.
Maybe there'll be future books then.
Wow.
I mean, for you to write, not me. I've done mine.
Well, one of the things I've been doing is taking a class at the local local community college back in the Cleveland area on fiction writing. I took the class not because I necessarily want to write, but because I want to understand the process a little bit better. And it was very interesting.
But do you want to write?
I don't know. I'm going to say no.
I'm going to ask you again in 6 months. Because you'll have time to write.
Thanks a lot.
Let me close with a sincere comment. I know this probably isn't the most fun subject, but I think it's important. So thank you for talking about it.
You're welcome.
So that's my dad. And I think that's a good place to start our conversation with the folks in studio. And I'll just go around the table. And I think Dave and I had a conversation at WXXI maybe last week about this. And you said it seemed to me, like Dave, that you had a little bit of a different view of retirement.
Retirement, relevance too, I think, is part of it. But retirement fits in. Relevance for me is more inside out as opposed to what's around me and people accepting me as relevant. So I see what I can contribute to the different people and to the different things. That's why I'm working at WXXI at this particular point in time, because to me, that's I'm bringing what I can contribute, some of my experience and things like that, to the station. But marginalizing individuals, I think, at a point gets to be, again, inside out. One of the things I did read in Roger Angel's article, recent and not-so-recent surveys confirm that a majority of us people over 75, that's not me, keep surprising ourselves with happiness. And I think that by doing that and by looking for what makes us happy, it makes us relevant to others who look to us for how we react and how we react to situations that happen day to day. Wake up with a smile on your face, so will everyone else.
Hmm. Nancy, how are you feeling about the questions of relevance, retirement, the time that you have, and how you view, you know, the hours in the day? For my dad, it was a little overwhelming, and I wonder how you view it.
Well, I've been retired probably 20 years or more, and I think it's great. I also think what your dad is saying is really true, that retirement is a loss. And I can remember, you know, thinking, who am I? You know, I was a social worker. I spent 40 hours a week being a social worker. And I would grumble about this problem or that problem, and, you know, I got to get up. But all of a sudden, I didn't have to get up, and I didn't have any problems. And, you know, there was this void. And I had to reinvent myself all over again. And I said to a friend, remember when I turned 65, I got to figure out what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. And she, Daw, said to me, what do you want to do that you haven't done? I said, I'd like to see if I could write, and I'd like to see if I could draw. So I, with trepidation, took a writing course at Writers and Books, which was great. I also took a drawing course, which was disastrous. looking back, maybe it was the teacher. But I would say a couple of things to your dad. One is, if people don't want to listen to him, find other people who will. And the other thing is, if he doesn't like writing, don't write.
He's going to lie to you if he says he doesn't like writing. He does. He does. And let me also ask you, having been retired for 20 years, some of what I heard my father saying, I would probably articulate it this way. It sounds to me like he is grappling with a change from being part of a conversation to just observing conversations, to being part of sort of the interaction and the creation of, you know, sort of society, and then just observing, which I think is an overstatement. And Dad, I hope you're listening, and I don't think that's true at all. But I take the point that when the main work that you've been doing is gone, as Nancy says, it's a loss. That's an important way to describe it. It is a loss. That there's a risk that you go from feeling like I'm contributing to something to then I'm just observing it. And I hope that's not true. How do you feel 20 years into your retirement about that?
I think you find things that make you relevant. And for me, it's a combination of doing what I enjoy, and I love to play bridge. And for those other three people in that bridge group, I'm relevant. I belong to a church and have, at this point, taken on a major role in the church. Those people need me. I'm relevant. I have a friend in the hospital who has an end-stage disease. I try to get over to see her a couple of times a week. That's relevant. You know, but it does take time to reinvent yourself and figure out a combination of, but I found, you know, it's what makes me feel good. And another thing is, I think as you get older, you learn not to take yourself too seriously. You know, everything, you know, life's a joke and then you die. I don't know if you've ever heard that, but it's really kind of the way it goes. Yeah.
All right, Xenia. So let me turn to Xenia Brown, who is our colleague from downstairs here at WXXI. You see her at the front desk often when you stop in here. How do you feel about the importance of either feeling relevant or feeling like you are... There are people who value your ideas and opinions. We certainly do here at WXXI.
Oh, thank you.
That's true. It's true. But I wonder how you feel about some of what you've been reading and some of what you heard there.
I don't know. I think because when I left Xerox, it was from, I had a disease. I had herpal encephalitis. So I was on disability, finally went off disability, and they got rid of a whole bunch of people. That's why I decided I'd go quit and get something out of it from Xerox, and then decided I had to work.
You had to work?
Yeah, because I wanted to. I wanted to do something, and so I...
Why didn't you just, quote-unquote, stay at home?
Because it didn't interest me.
Can I also, by the way, I want to acknowledge something that's important. There's a lot of privilege in a conversation about even having the option to do that, and I want to just acknowledge that and put that on the table. But having acknowledged that for you, it didn't interest you. Just
no, it didn't at all. It was more fun to go do something and to interact with people. So for... several years, I was working at a secondhand clothing store through three different owners. And then I was also volunteering here and ended up working here.
Well, good for us. But
I think it's good for me, too.
How did you feel about, I wonder then how your friends, my dad said his friends in retirement would say, well, this is great. You don't have to do anything. And do you have friends who sort of feel that way?
Some want to do something, so they'll volunteer at different things because they don't want to just sit home and do nothing. I think that's most of them. They're really into volunteering or doing something. Not just sitting home doing nothing.
Do you think you'll continue to work indefinitely?
Probably. Yeah, because I like it.
Well, I want to say...
I mean, at some point, I might not be able to, and then
sure.
I'll retire.
Then you'll retire.
Right.
So we get a lot out of having you, and I really mean that here, but I want to ask you what you get out of working at WXXI.
First of all, meeting people... finding out what's going on in the world, staying up to date on what's going on in the world and around here, and that keeps me going. I'm into news. I really like news.
And let me ask Deb the same question. Then I got one more question for the panel, and I'll turn it over to our phone callers because I see our phone has been ringing. Deb White's a retiree and an adventurer. What kind of adventures do you take?
Oh, my goodness. When I retired the first year, I just lay on the couch and looked at the trees. I couldn't do anything else than that. And then I started to add things to my life, and I volunteer at the little two-bed hospice in Webster, which is talk about relevance, and finding relevance in people who are at the end of their life is just a remarkable experience. I continue to be active at the gym, and I play volleyball, and I've joined a book group, and I facilitate some art groups, and I've found parts about my career that I loved the most, and I've folded them into experiences that just bring me joy.
Retired for how long?
5 years.
Did you struggle at all with retirement?
No.
You did not struggle with retirement.
I was very proud of my career, and I was ready to be done.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's interesting because I think my father would say the same. I think a lot of people who, I would hope a lot of people are proud of their career. And yet, like Nancy said, there's still a sense of loss because it was such a big part of who you are. But you seem to have really sort of delineated it and said, okay, this was something I'm proud of. I can set it aside and it's over now.
It coincided with when I was diagnosed with diabetes. And it turns out I have adult onset type 1. And so caring for myself, you know, because I'd spent so much of my life caring for other people and caring about my job and you know, how the system worked and all that. So that changed considerably to tending to myself and what I needed. So that made it easier in some way.
Okay. Well, I want to ask all of you, and I'll go back around and then we'll take some phone calls. Have you experienced what Roger Angel experienced? Being in a group, as he describes in his piece, This Old Man, which you ought to read, it's a really beautiful piece. He describes being in, with a group of friends, and they are, most of his friends in that group were in their 60s, and they're talking about global warming, they're talking about Virginia Woolf, they're talking about all these things, and he jumps into the conversation, and everyone sort of looks at him, and he says he just felt no one even had a single thing to say to him. Okay, old man, you've had your time, now we've got, now the conversation is ours to have, and he felt sort of ignored. I hope That part of the piece made me think, am I doing this to people who are older than me? It made me sort of turn inward, and I was sort of embarrassed when I thought about that, because I fear the answer a little. Have you experienced that? Deb, have you felt that way at all?
I'm not sure if this is an answer to the question, but I would say I've felt invisible a lot of my life, even though it doesn't quite make sense. But I would say the thing that's different in retirement is that I am much more willing to engage with people that I don't know, or to introduce myself, or to start a conversation. So that if I feel like that invisibility is occurring, I will go up and start a conversation with someone, so that I'm breaking the barrier of invisibility.
That's interesting. More so than you were willing to do when you were working.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And I do improv now, courtesy of Megan Mack. And I think that has helped me a great deal take risks that I wouldn't have otherwise.
I've heard good things. There's a couple of the people at this table I've heard. That's interesting. You know, Xenia, I want to turn back to that question with you. And Roger Angel says in the piece, he's heard from women that phenomenon for women, there's a sexist part of it that starts for women often when they're in their 50s, is what his friends have told him. Have you ever felt either ignored or invisible in a conversation like that?
No.
Good.
No. Oh, the only time I'll feel ignored is if I just don't say anything, if I don't come out with something. A lot of times I'd rather listen to people than take part. If I find something that I have to say, I'll say it, and they'll listen.
By gosh, they're going to listen.
I love it. Nancy, how about you? Have you experienced it?
I haven't. Now, I'm not a willow, so maybe people find me irrelevant and I just say, hey, I've got something to say. I also, this guy's 90. Maybe by the time I'm 93, right, I'll be irrelevant. I'm not ready for that yet. I also think that, you know, inside I feel about 16, and sometimes that's the way I act. I do find I have less of a filter, and I need to be careful. But you know, I sometimes maybe am too, you know, what I think is relevant may not be. But I was in Megan's comedy improv course and still go once a month when I can, because I love being around these young people, and they see this woman, you know, who has as much fun as they do. And that really makes me feel good for us. You know, it's really the opposite, to be able to relate.
It's a great point Nancy's making, Dad and others. You go to comedy improv, they cannot ignore you. They cannot ignore you at comedy improv. Dave, has that happened with you at all?
I've been around not 20-somethings, but my son and daughter are 37 at this point in time. And being around them and their friends and talking about things, I certainly put my opinion out there. And we know what opinions are, but in any case...
or what they're worth.
Yeah, what they're worth. And like Xenia said, part of, I think, still learning and that ambition to learn is listening. And that's how you can kind of maintain some sort of touch with what's going on, by being around the 30-somethings and 40-somethings and being part of that, integrally part of that as well.
I find, you know, it's interesting. I was just on a trip with my sister and brother-in-law and all their kids and grandkids. And my great-niece, who's now 17, will be starting college in the fall, she was just fascinating to listen to and to talk to. I really enjoyed it. And there was a very big difference, I think, between her growing up and when I grew up. And it was really a lot of fun to be with her. She was one of the few people, you know, with the group out of Florida. Her high school did the 17-minute walk. And she was one of the organizers of it. And I thought, wow, that's really something.
Well, we're learning a lot from our panel, and I'm going to be remiss if I don't grab a couple of phone calls because some folks have been waiting to jump in. So I'm going to start with Keith. Thank you, Keith, for your patience. Go ahead.
Evan, interesting call. I sort of admire your dad. I'd like to see you get him on air so just to call in. But I'm old enough to retire, but I won't retire until about 2 years after I die. That's what I'm thinking.
Yes.
I have found out. How old you are is, no, your age is a number. How old you are is something else. The other thing that affects people retiring are one or three things. If you have a defined benefit, i.e., say, a teacher or a good union retirement, you may have to retire as soon as you can because you know you're going to be pretty much set for the rest of your life. If you were wise enough during your working years to make good investments, on your own or through a corporate 401k, matching funds, et cetera, that would be the other type. But most of the people who are elderly don't have a lot of money left. I mean, even the statistics do that or verify that. That all being said, when my uncles retired, they went to Florida like everybody else, and I asked them, how do you like retirement? And I could tell right then and there, he said, you can just play so much golf. And they actually missed work. Now, I don't. You said your dad was an attorney?
Yes.
Now, I don't know what type of litigation he did. You know, if it was like defending the downtrodden or trying to find somebody to sue for a back injury. But he may have enjoyed his job so much that he misses it. And I would encourage, again, that being said, now, I'm an old person, but I'm also a volunteer EMT. If he really wants to do that, I don't know how it works in Ohio, but he can look for a volunteer agency and start out possibly as a driver and just see if he likes it and work his way all the way up to possibly paramedic. But paramedic is basically you get an associate's degree if you're a paramedic.
Yeah.
But there's different levels of EMS, too.
Yeah, I'm not sure he likes to drive. I'm not sure he likes to drive. Yeah, okay.
So then he shouldn't be doing that.
Keith, thank you. I got to scroll on here, Keith. But that's some. I appreciate the phone call and the insight and how you're feeling about it. And Keith joking that he's going to retire 2 years after he dies. That would have been my dad's probably preference, I assume. Not an option for his line of work. I don't think he's going to drive, but an AMT as an EMT. But I think. He's going to continue holding babies in the NICU, and I'm very proud of him for that. I think that's great. I think it's great to find needs in the community like that. We've seen in our own community here in Rochester, the NICU and the units here do some life-saving and vital work, and until my father decided he was going to hold babies, I didn't even know you could do that as a volunteer. So, and by the way, Keith, one more point before I take our only break, and we'll come back to your phone calls in a moment. So Marion Webster, please stay right there. My dad's a little overexposed on the show now. We don't need more of him. The more time he has on the show, the more he's going to realize he's unemployed now and he might take my job. Let's get our only break of the hour. Marion Webster will take your phone call next as we talk about these issues and more right here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on the next Connections, Howie Hawkins joins us. He's the Green Party candidate for governor, challenging Andrew Cuomo, trying to shake up a political system that Hawkins says has been failed by Republicans and Democrats. We'll talk to him about another run for governor. It's our series of interviews with the gubernatorial candidates. We heard Stephanie Miner last week, Howie Hawkins tomorrow, and a lot more to come on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. The piece in The New Yorker that you ought to read is by Roger Angel titled This Old Man. And I want to get more phone calls and emails in. Let's go to Mary in Webster next. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi, this is Mary Lynn, and a great program, Evan. I wanted to tell you I'm in my early 70s, and I sold my business about 4 years ago after like serial 8 or 9 different careers. And I have so many choices of what to read, where to go, where to travel, and everything. And I consider the decisions of how to spend my time based on the fact that I don't have infinite time left in my life to travel to this place or read this book or spend time with that person or go to this movie or that. And that might sound selfish, but I'm very picky about how and who I spend my time with.
Does that sound selfish? No, I don't think that sounds selfish at all, at least not from my perspective, but I'll ask you, stay on the line, Mary. That's an interesting point.
No.
Does that sound selfish to you,
No,
Zina?
Not at all. I think that's what you want to do when you can pick people that you feel close to or that you want to be with or you want to learn from. Those are the ones you should be.
Yeah, the places, the classes I take and everything, it's I want to do them. And oh, Evan, please tell your dad never to use that phrase "kill time." He used that when he talked about it. Oh, don't kill time. You don't have infinite time ahead of you. Time is finite, so value it every minute.
Thank you, Mary. I will not only pass that along, but time is relentless. We don't have a choice on that. So the notion of, I don't remember who it was, but someone in my life told me years ago, and to Xenia's point and to Mary's point, yeah, you will learn that you are wasting, the only time wasted is when you spend it with people who you really don't think mm-hmm. deserve it or are right. worthy of it, but you do it anyway out of obligation. Find mm-hmm. a way not to do that is what I was told a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So to Mary's point, I don't think it sounds selfish at all.
Mm-hmm.
I was struck by what Nancy was saying during our brief break about the questions you are not asked that surprise you. Tell me about that.
Well, nobody ever says to me what to do when you were younger. They don't care. There, you know, if they ask me questions at all, and as I say, that's interesting. I'm not sure I get asked a lot of questions.
About what life was like for you.
About what life was like, yeah. And for me, as I get older, I appreciate my history and the history of Rochester and the history of the country and the world more than I did as a young person when. You live in the present, and you don't.
But you're saying young people in general do not really ask you what life was like for you.
No, my grandchildren never ask me. I don't think they have any interest.
Dave,
they're not
ahead.
Old enough, maybe.
I think what our generation, and I'm talking about people around this table at this time except for you, and seem to ask our parents more about what they did than what, as Nancy said,
what current, kids these days ask.
Yeah. Right, they're not looking to see. I remember talking to my father about the war and about the different things that he did growing up and living through the Depression and all the different times that he would talk about. But we don't get there, those questions. Nancy, I think you're absolutely right about the fact that they don't really seem to care about what it was like beforehand. And it was that relevant at the time, and it was.
I think this is actually a place where I can now disagree with my dad a little. I asked him, what do people who are younger than you, people like me, what can we do to not make our family members, our friends who are older, either feel irrelevant or sort of adrift a little bit? And my dad was saying he doesn't think that's probably going to change. It's usually the people who have to do the changing are the people who are causing sort of the harm, and it's hard to see it when you're doing it because you think, well, I've waited for my shot. This is my shot. Mm-hmm. But that's a little self-absorbed and myopic. And to mm-hmm. Nancy's point, if people are not asking you what was life like, that's one way that people who are younger, and younger could mean 50, it could mean 30, it could mean 15, could ask that, number one, maybe it makes you feel good to have a conversation about that, but it also is, really instructive for those of us who grew up, because all times are different. Every generation is different with technology, the rhythm of daily life. And I think there's something really valuable about knowing how things have changed because we get mm-hmm. so caught up in how we view our own issues and problems. And I think mm-hmm. that perspective can help us. What do you think, Nancy?
I think you're right. I also think I have changed. I am a completely different person than I was 20 years ago. I never thought about writing a play until after I retired. You know, I'm taking class at Osier. I haven't done that in 20 years. But, you know, it's like, hey, this looks interesting. When I was working, I was not interested in taking classes. So that we change, to, you know, we change as well as the environment that we're in changes. And, I think our perspective on time, too, changes, that we live much more. I live much more in the present. Mm-hmm. Than I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Deb, you're nodding. You want to add to that?
I guess it sort of goes back to, if I'm not asked about it, I bring it up more. And I'll say, you know, I think my kids roll their eyes sometime about that. But I do look at places around Rochester when we're driving around, or I'll talk about, you know, how life is different for me. So even though I may not be asked a ton of questions, I certainly add my two cents when it's seems appropriate.
Let me read a couple of emails. Edward says, Evan, thanks for having your dad on the show. He articulated almost everything that I have felt since retiring. He made me feel better. I retired 8 months ago from a job that for 32 years made me feel useful and relevant. I truly felt that I was contributing to our community, and I miss that feeling. Health issues prompted my decision to retire. I was the second oldest of over 50 people in my office performing my job. He just says, it's been difficult. Well, here's another email that I think is worth addressing. Alex says to us, when discussing the relevance of older Americans, I've seen many people tie relevance to productivity, be it through art, exercise, or hobbies, but almost always labor, a job. The old Simpsons bit where Grandpa Abe starts working in fast food simply to feel relevant again is over 20 years old now, but still rings true to that cultural anxiety. How do you feel about this expectation? Alex, that's kind of what I brought up with my dad when I brought up the difference between the United States and Europe, which I am not an expert in and probably should not overstep on cultural analysis there, but just the idea of work tied to identity. When you meet somebody new at a party, one of the first questions you ask, maybe the first, is, oh, what do you do? And that's very much tied to this idea of work as identity. And that's, I think, to Alex's point there. Xenia, you were at Xerox for how long?
13 years.
Okay. So do you feel like it was easier to walk away because it was 13 and not 33 years?
The job changed over that time, so it was very easy to walk away. Well, I was sick and, and went out on disability. But yes, even knowing I wanted to go back, but it really wasn't that interesting as it had been. They had let a lot of people go that I thought were really terrific. So the job changed.
And do you think we tie our identity to work too much or too often?
Probably. I think in Europe, they're much better about it, that when you retire, you look forward to doing other things.
Mm-hmm. Nancy?
Yeah, I think it takes time. I think you really have to reinvent yourself. And it takes a year or maybe even 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I saw that for me, and I saw it for my husband and also for his friends and colleagues. It really does take time.
So
like,
don't,
who am I now? So, who am I going to be now that I'm not a lawyer or a doctor or a social worker or whatever? Who am I? What makes it worth getting up in the morning? Now, your dad has a reason 2 days a week to get up in the morning. He goes to the NICU. He's got to figure out what he's going to do those other 5 days.
He's going to figure that out.
I think he is.
let me take another phone call. This is Tom in Rochester. Go ahead, Tom.
Hi, Evan. I'm 54. I recently lost my job last year. I was a bartender because I was told I was too old and that people didn't want to see somebody old behind the bar at 54. And it took me a long time to, I'm in the service industry, to find a new job. And going into applying for jobs where the people working there are more than half my age. Ever since I turned past 50, and I can relate to your father because I think what he's saying is when if you look at society, how we look at older people, the words we use for elderly, you know, we refer to that old man over there in the corner and we say words that can be just as offensive as racial slurs, in my opinion, and that starts where people start to feel irrelevant because you can't change, you know, it's like almost like as a white person getting old, you can't hide that. So you understand what it's like to be a black person, because you're always just that old person, no matter what. And how we look at older people is kind of negative. We become the butt of the jokes. You look at television shows and writings and how that is that bumbling old person, the person with the, you know, the Mr. Magoos and everything else who can't drive. And, you know, and I think that's a help foster that idea of irrelevance.
And Tom, what
and
do you...
Someone who can't,
Can I just ask you real briefly, Tom? Because as you said, you know, you had a job where they decided that, you know, you were too old to fit the profile of the job. What do you do next? Yeah. And what do you, what are you going to do to try to counter that in your life?
Well, first of all, I don't feel old. I went out and tried to find a job. I have the skills. I've had over, you know, 25 years of bartending experience. I'm in a position in that I will never be able to retire. And so I will work. And you have to just keep kind of forcing it. But it is very frustrating when you realize I can do these things. I'm not sick. I'm not hurt. I'm actually in very good shape. I was a personal trainer for years, you know. So, I mean, I have skills, but it's getting past that stereotype of just being that older person. And I understand that people want to look at pretty and they want to look at young, but we don't view older as pretty or beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Tom, thank you. And by the way, at 54, you are not old.
That's for sure.
Right. go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think anybody who is older than I am is old, and anybody who's younger than I am is young. And that changes each year.
It's all relative then. Well, let me read Harry's email. Harry says, "Dear Evan, listening to this discussion, what about assertiveness for seniors? Do we have to be pushovers?" And he sends me a picture with a coffee mug that it says, "I'd agree with you, but then we'd both be wrong." So Harry has a vote for being more assertive as we get older. That was sort of the point you've made. Deb, has it worked for you?
Oh, it's worked extremely well. Yeah, I'm more comfortable with who I am, and makes me much more fearless when I'm in situations that I don't know people. Like even walking in today down here, I didn't know anybody. And then you introduce yourself and you don't back away or wait for someone to start the conversation. You do it.
Well, it's just it's an interesting idea, because some people would say, if it's not in my nature, it's going to be hard to change it. But for you in retirement, it was a big change and you've done it.
Yes.
Wow, that's definitely interesting. Last few minutes here for our guests in studio, and let me go around the table and just ask for some final thoughts from all of you as you continue to work and explore hobbies. Have we been focusing on the right things here, Dave? Do you think we're missing part of the point? How do you feel about your own retirement and the importance of making sure that you still feel valued?
I probably have an advantage. I worked at St. Anne's Home for 26 years, so I was able to kind of work not only with the elderly, but they became my friends, best friends in a lot of cases. So I kind of learned from them on how to be old. And it was interesting, because one of the things that they always harped on was the life that the elderly led. And as you talk to people and listen to what they did and how they felt, bring that now into my retirement, into what I'm doing, and kind of mimic some of the things that I learned from them. And so that transition for me wasn't very difficult. It was actually to a degree enjoyable, and I look forward to doing things like being an aspiring writer and working right here over at WXXI and continuing on being able to have some input into what's going on around me.
Dave's an artist, too, and a very good one. I
do
dabble
in that as well.
You're very good. Honestly, very good. About 30 seconds apiece here, and let me go to Nancy next. Don writes to us and says, the person who talked about 2 years to become accustomed to retirement was spot on, and just sort of an admonition from Don, among others, that be patient, that there are certain things to learn about retirement. Some final thoughts from you, Nancy.
Well, just live each day. As I say, laugh. Don't take yourself too seriously. And look for role models, like the 95-year-old woman that I play bridge with. They're, you know, people are young until they're old. And sometimes people never get old. It's all just a state of mind, as far as I'm concerned.
Xenia.
I think that's absolutely right. I'm thinking of some of the volunteers here at WXXI. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could call them elderly, maybe, but they don't look it and they don't act it. And they're just great people to be around.
Well said. Deb?
I would say that I took the parts of my life that I enjoyed the most when I was working, and I parlayed them into activities now. So I love being active and doing things. I helped my sister build a horse barn. You know, I love being with people, so I work at the Comfort Care. I do improv. And so part of it is just taking those parts that I loved, sort of sloughing off the other parts, and then finding activities that echo with that.
Our thanks to Deb White, retiring adventurer, and Xenia Brown, who you'll see here at WXXI downstairs as a part-time receptionist for WXXI. David Diator is down there as well as a part-time security officer, aspiring writer, probably a soon-to-be-published author. If I saw the manuscript sitting there, he'd give a thumbs up. Right, Dave?
I hope.
And Nancy Preston Stark, who's a retiree and a playwright. Lots of improv comedy. A lot of great stuff happening in this group. I learned a lot from all of you. Thank you very much for taking the time to share with us this hour. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Dad, I love you, and you are still the best editor and the wisest counsel I know, and that will never change. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Mack, producer. Thanks for listening this afternoon. Enjoy the beautiful sunshine if you're in Rochester Finger Lakes, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.